I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Playing a long drive, there it is, number 500, the career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith.
Rollins slides, Rollins has won it, they stream out of the dugout, yeah. Rollins by yeah. Near third, this game is over.
It is out of here, 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Helen.
Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. And this is a special edition of the podcast. We're calling it episode 225, but this is going to be our World Series preview. I'm John Stolness, a writer for The Good Fight, as you well know, and for NumberFire.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, I am going to talk to one of my absolute favorites, the great Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports. He is, of course, the host of the Yahoo Sports MLB podcast. Jeff's going to stop by to talk about the World Series and talk about the Astros cheating scandal and give us a few quick thoughts on the Phillies as they head into this obviously very important offseason. So, but just before we get to Jeff, just to set things up for us a little bit here, obviously we've got the World Series. We finally have the Fall Classic. We're down to our final two teams, the Boston Red Sox and the Los Angeles Dodgers. When you think of all the different pennants that these teams have won, it's really amazing that this is the first time these teams have met in the World Series since 1916. It has been a long time since the Dodgers, the franchise that was the Dodgers, they were called something completely different. The Brooklyn Robins, I think, back in 1916 when they took on the Boston Red Sox in the World Series. The season after, the Red Sox beat the Phillies in the 1915 World Series, clearly a fall classic we all remember deeply. But really, 102 years, 102 seasons, 102 years between a fall classic matchup between these two teams. And really, you've got the best team in the American League against the best team in the National League. Despite the Brewers having a better record than the Dodgers, I think we can all agree the Dodgers are a more complete team, the most complete team in the National League. And after getting off to a really slow start this year, and after really still their playoff chances were in doubt as of September, when the Rockies, before the Diamondbacks collapsed, there was real concern the Dodgers weren't even going to get back into the postseason. But they did. They managed to get past. They managed to win the division in a game 163 that they won against the Rockies. Then they beat the Atlanta Braves in four games in the National League Division Series. Made it look pretty easy beating the Braves. And then they outlasted the Milwaukee Brewers in that seven-game death struggle before finally winning that game seven pretty comfortably against Milwaukee. Thanks to that amazing catch by Chris Turner out in left field. Justin Turner, Chris Taylor. Get the two names mixed up. I know that the players are different, but you'll just, in my mind, they get locked together. Robbing Christian Yelich of that big double in Game 7, and then Yasiel Puig hitting that three-run home run. Obviously, some real interesting players on this Dodgers team to watch. You've got Puig, you've got Cody Bellinger, you've got Jock Peterson, Justin Turner, you've got Manny Machado, of course, the main villain. Public enemy number one. You have a villain in this World Series to root against, which will be kind of interesting. And then you've got some great, and then you got the Boston Red Sox, who won 108 games. They handled the Yankees very easily, both in the division, winning by eight games, and then in four games in the American League Division Series. They handled the Houston Astros pretty easily in just a five-game American League Championship Series that didn't quite live up to the hype, and now these two teams are on a collision course against one another here in the World Series. And I think the Red Sox have to be heavy favorites going into this thing. I think that this is going to be a series in which starting pitching finally steps to the forefront. Listen to these pitching matchups. In Game 1, you've got Clayton Kershaw and Chris Sale. That is confirmed. What a Game 1 matchup. Game 2, you have Hyunjin Ryu against David Price. Again, two terrific left-handers going up against each other. And then in Game 3, Walker Buehler will pitch for the Dodgers. The Red Sox haven't announced their guy, but it's going to be most likely, I think, Nathan Eovaldi, although Rick Porcello could get the start as well. But no bullpen games. No, unless you get a 20-inning game thrown in the mix here, no bullpen games in this series. And so you've got stars throughout: Andrew Benintendi, Mookie Betts, J.D. Martinez, Jackie Bradley Jr. on the Red Sox side, and all the guys I mentioned on the Dodgers side. Great starting pitching, some really good bullpens too, but I think you're going to see these games have a rhythm that you're more used to. Starting pitchers starting the game, relief pitchers in the middle to late innings, and you'll see these teams. You might see Mookie Betts at second base when the series shifts to Los Angeles, so that'll be cool. And you've got a lot of pressure on the Dodgers, who lost Game 7 last year to the Houston Astros. The Dodgers have not won a World Series since 1988. It has been 30 years since the Dodgers have won a title. The Red Sox are looking for their fourth title since 2004. And joining us to talk all about it is the great Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports. He is the host of the Yahoo Sports MLB podcast. You can follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff Passan. Jeff, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you?
Doing great, John. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. And it's a great pleasure to have you back on the podcast. And we have got a good World Series shaping up here, I think. I think that a lot of us were looking at the ALCS and thinking, man, the Red Sox and the Astros, that's going to be one of the best postseason series we're going to see in a long time. But it ended up going just five games. And, you know, I think we all were kind of hoping for a little bit more from that. But Red Sox-Dodgers is not bad, is it?
No, I actually thought if it was going to be a five-game series, it was going to be Astros in five rather than Red Sox. So it shows you what I know. the Red Sox are just a really, really good baseball team, and the Astros looked flat. And I'm not quite sure why. I don't know if there's a hangover. I don't know if it's injuries. Or maybe they just got outplayed by the better team. I think that's probably ultimately what ended up happening. And to think that the Dodgers, who were in third place at one point in the National League West in September, are in the World Series now, it's a testament to them and the way that Dave Roberts has been able to guide them past a really tough Milwaukee team.
Before we get into the nuts and bolts of the Fall Classic, what have been your thoughts on the MLB playoffs this year? I know there's obviously a lot of hand-wringing about the lack of balls in play, the number of strikeouts, the number of bullpen innings being thrown by pitchers this year. In the Fall Classic, it seems like we're seeing a lot more use of relief pitchers. It's a trend that's been growing, but a lot of bullpen games, especially by the Brewers, who I know don't have a very good starting rotation. But just in general, what's been your sense of the playoffs this year?
I've enjoyed them, parts of them. I think those are a separate thing. I actually don't mind bullpen games as a baseball fan, like as a hardcore fan.
Yeah.
But as a general rule, the audience tends not to know relief pitchers and tends not to associate positive things with relief pitchers like they do aces in the past. And I almost wonder if the World Series is going to be a return to that. You've got Clayton Kershaw versus Chris Sale in Game 1. David Price and Hyunjin Ryu in Game 2, Walker Buehler, and either Nate Eovaldi or Rick Porcello in Game 3. So we're gonna see some stud starters in this series. The strikeouts are bothersome. It's, you know, there's no other way to put it. There's been almost 100 more strikeouts this postseason than there have been hits.
Yeah.
And I know it's not a lot of games, but it's not a particularly enjoyable brand of baseball when the ball's not in play. And I wish, as a fan, it were in play more, and when it gets into play, like the Red Sox have been putting it in, you see good things happen. And I think that's what this series is going to come down to. If the Red Sox can put the ball in play, they're going to win. And if the Dodgers can do more like they did in Game 7, where they were able to get the ball out there and really get it rolling, I think that they've got a chance to stay in this series.
Yeah, that's one of the things I thought was going to make the ALCS really interesting, is because the Red Sox and Astros both have, generally speaking, low strikeout rates. And Right, with the Red Sox, they have power, but they really generate their offense by not striking out. Whereas with the Dodgers, you get a lot of strikeouts in that offense, and they're very reliant on the home run. So far, it's worked for LA. They've been out homering teams, but that's also been the formula here in the postseason, is just out homer the other guys so far.
Yeah, and look, there are a lot of home runs on both of these teams.
Oh yeah,
I mean, if you look at the top of the Red Sox lineup, you've got Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi, J.D. Martinez, and whether it's Xander Bogaerts or Steve Pierce hitting cleanup, and down to the bottom of the lineup with Jackie Bradley Jr. showing out over these last few games, it's been pretty incredible to see just the depth of that lineup. And the Dodgers, they're 12 deep with guys who can hit home runs, and they will just punish you.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, keeping the ball in the ballpark is going to be a huge part of this series as well. And the Red Sox actually did an excellent job of that against Houston.
Let's look at the Dodgers here real quick. It's been 30 years since they last won the World Series. That's hard to comprehend when you figure how many times they've been to the playoffs, how big their payroll generally is, and some of the stars that have gone through that organization. Compare that to the Marlins, who've won two championships since that time.
Yeah.
You know, and after,
or the Red Sox, who have won three.
Right, after they went, 86 years between World Series championships? I mean, my goodness, it really is hard to fathom that the Dodgers haven't been able to do this. How much pressure are they under, coming so close last year, getting to a Game 7 against the Astros last year, and now they're back? Who knows what the future has in store for this team? They should return a lot of players next year. It remains to be seen if Kershaw will come back, but this looks to be a good young team for a number of years. What kind of pressure are the Dodgers facing this year, though?
I think they're facing the same pressure that they faced last year, and frankly, the same that they've faced in the past 5 years when they've won division titles. It's, you know, when you get that lottery ticket, man, it is hard to get in there and go throughout the playoffs and win a World Series. And I think they're a testament to that. You know, Billy Beane, his famous line, my shit doesn't work in the playoffs. that can be said for just about everybody, right? It's like you have to get hot at the right time, and both of these teams have gotten hot. It's just a question of which one's going to be able to sustain it over the course of the 7-game series. The fact that the Dodgers are here, though, without Corey Seager right now, I mean, he's arguably their best player.
Yeah.
And they've missed him for almost the entirety of the season. So they're going to be fine going forward. They've got the payroll. They've got the farm system. They've got everything going for them right now. But they absolutely don't want Kirk Gibson to be their last memory of a World Series win.
Yeah, they need to move on. They need to move on and get another Fall Classic hero all lined up, because maybe that guy is Manny Machado, the guy that they traded for to replace Corey Seager. He obviously was someone that everyone took note of in the National League Championship Series. I called it a full heel turn from Machado, because he really almost
was it, though. Was he ever the face?
No, I don't think he was. And it's funny, because it's been a long time since 2014 when he got into those altercations with the A's, and then in 2016 when he got into the fight with Yordano Ventura. But I know even last year, and this is going to be one of the storylines coming into the series as well, is when he went in high with his spikes to break up a double play last year against the Red Sox. And he seems to have embraced being the villain. And for me, Jeff, I kind of like the fact that baseball has a villain in this Fall Classic, someone that a lot of the country is probably going to root against.
Yeah, and look, I stood with Manny Machado today for upward of 40 minutes during media day just to see how he would react to it, and he had a canned response, which was, I'm just happy to be here playing in the World Series. I just want to win a World Series. And I understand why he's taking that tack. You know, it's not fun to be the villain. It's not. It takes a different type of personality to embrace that. And I don't know that Manny Machado wants to be that guy, but the problem is his actions speak louder in this case than his words.
Yeah.
And his actions, whether it's, you know, stepping on Jesus Aguilar or not running out ground balls, they speak everything you need to know about him as a player.
How much of his actions in the NLCS, and I ask this obviously as an interested Phillies fan, how much have his actions cost him as a potential free agent? Do you think there are teams that are turned off by what they've seen, given some of the stuff that happened back in 14 and 16 and all that?
I suppose, but I can't imagine when it's all said and done that a team that's interested in a 26-year-old superstar quality player is going to let that get in the way of them going and getting him. And that's why I don't think in the end it's going to have much to do with what he signs or where he signs at all. I think he's still going to be seen as Manny Machado star, and he's going to get paid like Manny Machado star.
Yeah. You mentioned in a piece talking about the death of the can't win in October guys, where we're talking about Clayton Kershaw and David Price. Price finally got the monkey off his back in the ALCS, finally started a game in which his team won, and he pitched very well, and Clayton Kershaw pitched dynamite in his second game in the National League Championship Series, the second game that he pitched in the NLCS, and then obviously came on in relief for that final inning in Game 7. There are pitchers that have struggled in the playoffs in the past, and we've seen Clayton Kershaw have his struggles in the past. We've also seen him have good games in the past, and does this mean that there are, you know, that some of these star players that they just need a larger sample size in order for things to kind of even out or a little bit? Or, you know, are there some guys maybe that just have a tougher time in these spots?
I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. Yeah. I think they go hand in hand almost, to be honest. My issue with the narrative in this case is that David Price or Clayton Kershaw can't pitch well in the playoffs. I don't think that's true. I think they had it in a lot of cases. Price certainly more so than Kershaw. And that both of them showed in those last games that they pitched that they are plenty capable of pitching well in these scenarios. It's a matter, though, especially with Price, I think, of evolving and of really homing in on what your weaknesses are and doing the best you can to mitigate them. And in Price's case, that was throwing the changeup more. He had confidence in his changeup. He threw it more than he has ever in any of his previous 300 starts. And to do that in such a pressure game like that, I think took an enormous amount of faith in himself. And I really appreciated the fact that he was willing to go out and do it that way, because he had been terrible in postseason starts in the past, and that's the kind of thing that can chase a guy and really get in his head.
Let's talk about the guy Kershaw is going to oppose in Game 1, and that's Chris Sale. This is a fantastic matchup, first of all. I mean, Kershaw-Sale, I'm trying to remember the last World Series starting pitching matchup we had that was this good. Nothing is popping to mind. Where you've got, I mean, obviously we're not looking at, like, vintage Kershaw. This version of Kershaw is still pretty damn good, though. And right now, Chris Sale is maybe one of the two or three best pitchers in the American League. Obviously, Sale had some issues last week where he was taken to the hospital. He's been joking about the fact, or maybe not joking about, a belly button ring that he said got infected. But, you know, there's a little bit of a mystery.
Definitely joking.
I mean, I'm trying to picture Chris Sale with a belly button ring. I mean, that's obviously, I don't want to make assumptions. But is there a little bit of a cloud over Chris Sale, or is he fully healthy?
That's a big question. Everyone's going to be looking at the radar gun, because remember, Chris Sale in his first playoff start against the Yankees came out and was absolutely throwing gas. And then in his first playoff start against the Astros came out and was at times not even hitting 90 with his fastball. And you wonder if that had to do with the stomach ailment or if it had to do with his shoulder, which has been vexing him over the last month of the season. I think that's going to be the big story in Game 1. What kind of Chris Sale do the Red Sox get? And if it's not up to the standard that they're hoping for, or that that everyone's come to expect from him, do the Red Sox have enough to eventually go and pull out a game against Clayton Kershaw? It's going to be a hard thing to do, and I think it's one of the things that makes Game 1 fascinating.
It does, and this is Kershaw's first ever game in Fenway Park, which is also kind of hard to believe. I know obviously the Dodgers and the Red Sox don't play each other very often, but you would have assumed just in one of these years.
I was going to say, it's at some point or another that you would figure he would start, but that's That's baseball.
Yeah, no doubt. And especially with interleague play with a team from the West and the East, you alternate parks every 3 years. We're looking, you know, we're trying to find some ways that the Dodgers can beat the Red Sox, because I think the Red Sox are, I don't know how heavy favorites they are, but they won 108 games in the regular season. I mean, this is a damn good baseball team, and I think they have to be considered the favorites. But you look at the Red Sox, how they've been vulnerable to left-handed pitching. They were 18th in baseball with a 719 OPS against lefties, and three of the four Dodgers starters, Kershaw, Rich Hill, yep, and Ryu, are lefties. If you're looking for a way for the Dodgers to kind of figure this out, that might be an angle. What do you think about that?
I think that's totally reasonable. If you look at the Red Sox lineup, Andrew Benintendi, left-handed. Jackie Bradley Jr., left-handed. Rafael Devers, left-handed. There are quite a few guys in that lineup who just aren't as good against lefties, and yet they've also got Steve Pierce. You know, they were looking at the trade deadline to get that big right-handed bat that would be able to hit lefties, and Pierce unquestionably is that guy, and I would anticipate he's going to be in the top five of that lineup, you know, behind Betts, Benintendi, J.D. Martinez, and somewhere along with Xander Bogaerts. So I think that the Red Sox are going to match up all right against the Dodgers left-handers, and what they're going to hope to do is get to the Dodgers bullpen, which admittedly has actually been all right.
Yeah.
There were questions about them as well, but Kenta Maeda's solidified himself. Kenley Jansen's stuff has taken a huge tick up lately. He's looked like his old Kenley Jansen dominant self, and the Red Sox bullpen has performed awfully well too. I mean, the fact that they were the better bullpen in that series against the Astros, for whom it was such a strength during the regular season, really was one of the surprises and one of the reasons that series lasted only five games.
No, absolutely. There was a big surprise, the Red Sox bullpen. And the Dodgers did very well with their bullpen work against the Brewers, who were perceived to have the better bullpen as well. So, are you making a prediction on this series, Jeff, or are you staying out of the prediction game?
The prediction business is a total racket.
There's no money in it.
I would... If you gave me a dollar and asked me to bet on someone, I would say Red Sox, but I have zero confidence in that. And please don't hold me to it. I prefer that you didn't.
No worries. We'll delete that whole part as soon as the World Series is over, unless you're right. And then we'll leave it. Real quick, couple quick things, and then I'll let you go. I know you're busy, but I wanted to ask you real quick about the Astros cheating story that you were reporting last week. And, you know, the alleged cheating, the alleged sign stealing, some of the incidents with the Astros employee who was in the stands taking pictures of the Indians and the Red Sox dugout. Major League Baseball seems to have put it to bed. They don't want this thing to go any further. Is this situation with the Astros, in which I know the Oakland A's earlier this year made a request to Major League Baseball to check out some of the stuff the Astros were doing with stealing signs and all that kind of stuff. Has this ended? Has this gone away, or are there still some legs to this story?
I do not think that this story is over by a long shot. I think at some point or another, the full story will come out. And if and when that happens, I have a feeling that Major League Baseball is not going to look great for having essentially swept it under the rug. Because, look, some of the stuff that people say to me, maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But if it is true, this is something that's going to reverberate for a while.
Last thing, as a Phillies podcast, I got to get my obligatory Phillies question in, but it's going to be pretty general. Obviously, they've got an offseason ahead of them with some important things to decide, some free agents that they potentially want to go after, and, of course, the trade market. There are some guys that are rumored, but who knows how the trade market is going to shape out. Generally speaking, what is your view of this team after a confusing and up and down and all over the place 2018 season ahead of what we expect to be a busy offseason?
Well, I think that we saw signs of what the Phillies can be, and we also saw signs of what the Phillies aren't. And that latter part is the most important going into this offseason. They need bats. They need another starting pitcher. They need some bullpen arms. Mm-hmm. There are enough places for them to improve where I think if they play this offseason correctly, they have a chance to be right up there in the thick of the National League East, even more than they were this season. But let's not forget, the Braves aren't going anywhere. The Braves are only going to get better.
Yeah.
They won the division this year. And the Nationals, I think, are only going to get better, even if Bryce Harper does leave, because they've got really talented young players and they've got money to spend. So when you've got a combination of those things, you have a chance to get really good in a hurry. And the Phillies have an awful lot of competition in that division. And I think even, you know, you saw the way that the Mets played toward the end of the season. If the Mets can get a full season out of their rotation healthy like they did and just get a little bit more hitterish, I think that they're going to be right there as well. The National League East has a chance to be the best division in baseball over the next 5 years. And I think you saw a sprinkling of that this season, and I think you're going to see even more of it next year.
Yeah, the Mets owned the Phillies this year. It was really frustrating to watch, but when you look at the lineup, you're right. If they can get some offense on that team, holy cow. And
yep.
I think Phillies fans are just hoping that their front office and their manager knows what they're doing going forward, because
Then again, isn't every family.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Jeff, look, I'm going to let you get back to work, because I know you got a lot of work to do ahead of the World Series, but I really appreciate your time. Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports. Again, you can follow Jeff on Twitter, at Jeff Passan, and make sure to check out the Yahoo Sports MLB podcast, which Jeff hosts. Jeff, thanks so much for coming back on Hitting Season. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, John. Appreciate it.
Well, let me just give you my prediction here real quick. Again, predictions are pretty useless, but just for fun, I think that this is a series, the Red Sox, this just feels like the Red Sox season. From start to finish, the Red Sox have been the best team in baseball. Now, I mentioned to Jeff that the Red Sox do struggle against left-handed hit pitchers, and that is LA's specialty. If there was a National League team that could take down the Red Sox, it is the Dodgers. This is the National League team that will give the Dodgers, the Red Sox, their best, their toughest opponent, their toughest measuring stick. But if the Astros couldn't beat the Red Sox, I just don't see how the Dodgers are going to do it. Give me the Red Sox in 6 games over the Los Angeles Dodgers for their 4th title since 2004. And folks, that'll do it for this quick edition of Hittin' Season, episode number 225. Again, my thanks to Jeff Passan for coming back on the podcast. If you haven't done so already, gang, please head on over to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and subscribe. Also, subscribe to the Patreon for Hittin' Season. It's patreon.com/hittin'season, where you'll get a lot of my podcast previews. Just includes the Dirty Inning Extras will be there as well. And I will be featuring Game 1 of the 1980 World Series for This Week in Phillies History on the Patreon podcast as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.